Hell yeah.
The Gaming Guru Podcast. Detail the best gaming podcast in the world.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Gaming Guru Podcast. And we have quite a bit of a gem this week. We wanted to look at some of the questions that people have been asking around the kind of gaming fraternity. And one that keeps coming up is, how do I get to work in games? How do I get a career in gaming? It seems like this kind of hen's tooth, or you know, some strange thing that you've got to search around to find. You know, it's very, very rare. And so both Tim and I thought we would weigh in on just how we managed to get careers in gaming, how we've been working in games over the last couple of years, and potentially some advice we might give to other folks who are wanting to pursue careers in gaming. But as always, my name is Gareth, and I'm joined by the lovely Tim Lester. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, Matt. I'm good. It's been a good week. We had birthdays between now and the last pod. We're kind of like a few days apart. So happy birthday, Gareth.
likewise. The podcast leveled up in age over the course of the week. We both aged basically 2 years. And although with 2020 being what it is, a year feels much longer than if I think back to where the world was February 2020, right, to where it is now. I mean, I saw a tweet that says, it's hard to believe that next month is March when last month was March.
Quite literally, dude. But yeah. No, I've also had this question pass my brain in the most ADHD of ways while I'm like chilling on my ass, playing games for hours on end, thinking to myself, you know, could I get paid for doing this? And some people can.
Yeah. And I think let's start by addressing some of the misnomers and maybe some of the context for the question is, I get a lot of parents who will obviously find out that I work in the gaming industry, and they obviously being the parents of, you know, the 2020 or 2021 parents who are wanting to be engaged and passionate about their kids' passions, they go, listen, is gaming a real career? You know, as if like trying not to insult the fact that I'm presently doing it as a career, but they're trying to just ask like, is this real? Because my kids are super passionate about it, and they keep showing me these like the PewDiePies and the Markipliers and the Jacksepticeyes, and like, how do they get careers in gaming? And I think the first like bubble one has to pop is the idea that too often when kids are showing you, oh, I want to be a pro gamer or a YouTuber or whatever, they're showing you the cream of the crop, the guys that have made it, that are making millions and millions of dollars and have millions of fans and views every single video. But the fact is that there's an entire industry behind those individuals. And just like the music or the movie industry, not everyone in the industry becomes an A-list actor. Not everyone becomes a rock star in the music industry. I mean, let's hone in on the music industry, for example. If you told your parents, I want to go study music, that's like, okay, are you talking about music production? Are you going to be a music teacher? Do you want to be a professional, like, a musician for an orchestra? Are you talking about someone who's just a, you know, sound engineer? They're a whole different bunch of jobs that go into the music industry. They might have very similar overlaps in that I presume everyone in the music industry is passionate about music, but I doubt everyone in the music industry even plays an instrument. You know, no, I mean, Tim, your background's in the film industry, and you can't tell me everyone in the film industry went to film school or theater school or wants to be an actor, and this is just their failed plan B.
No, right. So, I mean, like, it's interesting you brought up the music example, because I actually have a background in both like film and in music, having done sort of both and been like, you know, like a B grade, like rock star vibe on the South African circuit years and years ago. But I also like fumbled my way into the film industry, where like I studied like film as an academic subject. So that's only like writing essays about film theory. it's like not actually holding a camera and doing practical things. Like I sort of got myself into the industry and taught myself the technical aspects like editing and filming and shooting. I always used to look at those kids in like the production school who got to work with those with that equipment like all the time and learn these things and felt kind of envious. But I took the media sort of PR approach and got into the industry that way. And same goes for gaming. I mean, like it's through that I managed to, you know, work gaming into my day to day. When, you know, when I was working in live television, I was, you know, at an advantage, or at least in, you know, I had the, I could basically bring any of the content that I wanted to the show within reason, right? Not everyone can do that as a producer, but I was the one who pushed gaming content in as much as I could, even if it was just like a drop in the bucket of all the other stuff that was going on in the show. And from there, that kind of went into other opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, when you joined at that stage Arena, which was like a tournament kind of organizer and operator, a lot of that was that like they needed someone to manage their kind of production facilities and, you know, background in TV, passion for games, knowing the right people at the right time, like there's, that got you kind of that job. And so I think that's the lesson sometimes with these sort of things is I think people want to have this idea that like you're going to leave high school and, you know, all things being equal, everyone's going to have done the same subjects and then it's time to choose a university degree. And that's the first time that you literally streamline onto your career. You're going to do a commerce degree or an arts degree or finance or whatever sort of thing. And you choose your lane kind of for the first time now. And if you're going to choose gaming, then you should study a gaming degree. And the fact of the matter is there just aren't that many. I mean, if you did a search for gaming degrees or gaming qualifications in South Africa, they're pretty much all design and development degrees. They will teach you how to code, how to use the latest kind of coding languages to be able to make a game and to know how to program. So you learn the right languages, you learn how to program, you might do a bit of design. But really there's very little in terms of the other facets of gaming. You know, like they're not going to teach you how to market games or how, you know, might be a bit of game theory in terms of the design of the games, kind of, you know, like how the game plays out, the rules of the game, and there might even be a little bit in terms of narrative writing. But the fact of the matter is most people who have jobs as game writers probably have background as writers, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't hit the ground running as game writers. Most of the people who are, you know, the guys designing the characters in that probably have design and art backgrounds, you know, maybe not even studied, but have portfolios. And I think we're talking about an industry that a lot of the kind of the main jobs didn't start out with the idea of getting into games in the beginning. It's even nowadays, it's still very rare to have formal gaming qualifications. You know, if let's look at some of the main streams of careers one can have within gaming. I mean, obviously, first and foremost, like if you're a game artist, so someone who's making the characters that are going to be in the game, most of them might have fine arts degrees or design degrees, you know, that then, you know, got an opportunity, built a portfolio to become artists in the gaming sphere. Another one, you know, maybe closer to your background, those in like audio engineering and audio programmers, the guys who are making the sound effects and the music for games. Yeah. I mean, they wouldn't, most of them wouldn't have gone, I'm getting a game. No, they would have got a regular ass like audio degree. Level design might be one that's a bit more specific and something you'd get from a more gaming focused degree, because I don't know that level design would feature too highly in other degrees.
I mean, is there like architecture that comes into that? Like I could see someone who's done like industrial design, maybe an architecture kind of leaning, because a lot of that is done with software programs as well.
Yeah.
Can probably really also then branch out into like designing levels, spaces, environments. I know I've also seen like a couple of developers posting vacancies for things like they want like a developer with or an artist, a digital artist with a background in like creating natural foliage or like in animals, for instance. Because like not everyone on that team will be really good at like making trees look like trees, you know?
Yeah.
So it's interesting. You can find your niche there as well. You can be like, I'm the tree guy. I'm the plant guy. You want a plant that needs drawing? I'm your dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He's the plantiest guy around, like, because he's got a degree in design and botany or whatever. And so his plants are just plantier than the others. Exactly. The other one is obviously a game producer and probably the ones that get a lot of the credit in the media because they're the guys who are kind of leading the projects and the design, the kind of game directors or game producers. But a lot of their job, honestly, is just project management. They are managing large teams with crazy timelines, both short and long term. But a lot of them, their backgrounds would be in project management. They would have studied whatever the latest project management techniques, whether it's agile or scrum or whatever, but they would just be good at managing large teams to tight like deadlines and timelines. And so they wouldn't have gone to game design school to become a producer. I think what ends up happening is the guys at the senior levels end up doing both. Like they've made games as a designer or as a programmer and then have gotten into the publisher stream in their companies because they've been put in charge of a bigger team and then a bigger team. And then eventually they leave the coal front of sitting at computers designing code and instead are in charge of teams of people who do that. And so that's how they get, you know, you look at some of the bigger names at some of the bigger studios, a lot of them are backgrounds as coders or designers. But, you know, now their core job, if they had to go back to varsity to study that, would be more in the kind of project management kind of space.
Yeah. And now you have, you know, a game lead designer like Neil Druckmann, who's now like an executive producer on an HBO show, you know, because that's kind of the trajectory that his career has sort of taken him.
Yeah. And then another one, game tester. I think this is the one that a lot of people think is the kind of easy in, is that you test games for a living. So guys who do alpha and kind of closed beta tests and all that sort of stuff. And to be honest, like there are people who do this. It's a very specific type of gamer that can do game testing because it is quite laborious, if I'm honest. You are often playing with very, very unfinished products. And a lot of what you're doing is you need to be pretty fastidious in terms of noticing even the slightest errors. It's not playing a game to get through it. You're playing it almost to break it. And
so you find the problems. So you go looking for the problems.
Yeah. And so you got to be the kind of person first and foremost that notice these things. You know, when you're playing a game and you notice that your character feels a bit laggy or the controls feel unresponsive, that's the kind of feedback that most people wouldn't even know how to articulate. You know, they'd be playing their character and be going like, I don't know why it just doesn't feel like I'm connected to my character. Someone who is like a good QA tester, quality assurance tester, they would be able to articulate those feelings of there seems to be some input lag when I'm responding, my character turning, the turn circle's too big. That they know how to articulate that sort of stuff. And so it's a very fastidious and analytical type of gamer that's going to want to get into this sort of thing. I think having to play through some pretty broken stuff sometimes might
put
a lot of
fun.
People off. Yeah. Yeah.
Also,
I mean,
it's worth
playing on wireframes and it doesn't look sexy. It's like it's a skeleton of your character, you know, beating up other wireframes and you've got to give feedback on that sort of stuff. So, you know, not for everyone.
Also worth mentioning that QA testing is notoriously the sludge when it comes to like positions in game design and game
development. This
it's
is bottom rung
notorious
stuff,
for the long hours, for the crunch, and just generally turning your brain into mush over long periods of time.
The next one is a PR specialist, and this is I think in South Africa a space where there've been opportunities for guys both locally and overseas. I think of a couple of friends who started their gaming careers in the PR space because, and we'll touch on it later when we talk about localization, the marketing and PR of games has still very much been local dependent. So we aren't at the space where PR briefs will come out from the global team and everyone must just like bend over backwards to copy and paste that. They're still very much aware that local PR and public relations relationships and messaging and tone and content is relevant, particularly when there's a language gap. So if you're going from a, you know, the irony is as much as we are an African country, it's still English first language kind of medium. So most of the gaming press releases and articles that are written are all written in English by English first language speakers. Whereas, you know, potentially as you go into some of the other kind of African countries, things would switch up and obviously not be as English. You would need a PR specialist who can take your messaging, translate it, you know, talk to the local community, the local media outlets, local influencers. And so PR has been a way for a couple of examples of local guys who've done that job locally and then moved overseas to do larger area PR. So PR for like Africa, Middle East, Turkey sort of region or European regions having come out of South Africa. And here as a PR specialist, and I've done quite a bit of gaming PR, your background really is less important as like in the formal gaming background. Most of the guys who I'd say in the gaming journalism and gaming PR space are writers first, some with journalism backgrounds, but very few. Most of them are just passionate writers who got their break just writing for free. And then, you know, if I take my story, wrote gaming reviews for free for a couple of the local publications and websites, sent them in, some published, some not, made YouTube videos, some published, some not, for free, literally nothing, going, I like this game and I want to make content. There you go. And then after a while, it became, hey, do you want to do a video or a write-up on this game? And then eventually getting paid for it and then growing to get, you know, bigger exposure, you know, getting paid in exposure bucks, but eventually getting paid in real cash to obviously create content. Which then leads on to the next space, which is currently where I kind of lie at the moment, which is in the marketing of games. So at present, I run an agency, which our kind of space or niche is getting gaming and brands to connect in the kind of gaming esports space.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if I had to study to get where I am today, I would have studied marketing and probably with courses in PR to have the skills that I have today. But I got those skills. If I'm honest, my background has got nothing to do with that. I have a science and law background. I just got those skills through day jobs, like Tim was saying, where even though his background was in, you know, video and all that, or more, I mean, wasn't in video. It was more in the kind of studying academically of film. You'd say that would arm you better to be like a film writer or a, you know, screenplay writer. You got into the technical side of film through job experience. And same here with me in marketing. It's like just through working at certain companies, doing these sorts of jobs, got me the skill set to then take my passion for gaming and my skill in marketing to be able to put the two together. Next one I'm talking about is localizers. So this is something I didn't realize was even that much of a thing until I started researching this topic and realizing that localization is a massive market. Like some companies like start out and, you know, can develop from there. I think Tim, you were saying about CD Projekt Red, just as localizing international content. You've got a game, you want to sell in our industry. I mean, just think of the Chinese market, for example. You've got a game and there are a billion people who don't understand it if it's in English. Like, we need to localize it. And as we know, that's not simply just translating it. That's the voice actors, the translation, sometimes even just the pre-censoring. You know, you're going to take out certain things because you know that the censors will tear it to pieces. Localizers do that. So
also, I mean, sometimes removing certain elements of the game that clash with like the cultural localization or switching around, you know, I think Witcher had to do a couple of some pretty interesting reworks of certain quests in order to have the game localized for like the Saudi Arabia market.
Yeah, and then obviously the one that most people think when they think a career in gaming, esports athlete. So
it's the one that I thought I could get at some point. Yeah. I was like,
and this was before esports was even a thing.
Standing in the way of me and my $1 million prize winnings, my career in Dota 2.
and I think the big problem is that that's where the narrative in gaming lies from a public point of view, is that if I look at any newspaper or magazine, whatever, their first article in gaming is always they've managed to get an interview with some local gaming guys after the big tournament like the International or the Fortnite World Cup, where someone's walked away with a massive prize purse. They interview some local dudes about like gaming here in South Africa, and they all talk about, oh, the massive prize pools and the cash earnings, whatever. But it's like, yeah, but how much have you earned? And there are very few people in this country who can say that they are professional esports athletes in that they earn a living. I mean, you know, a lot of people say professional means you earn the majority of your income from, you know, whatever pursuit. For me, it's just like you are playing at a professional level and you are able to pay your way, whatever that is. You know, even if it's, you know, some people say semi-professional in that you do other things. But I think there are very few people who can say they are earning a living from the playing of games. The majority of people, I think, in the gaming space in South Africa fit more into the next bit, which I'd say would be content creators and influencers. So people who, they play games, you might say they play games for a living, but they are not getting paid to play games. They're being paid to either use their influence on social media or to endorse products or to make content. That's how they're making their money. That is the majority of, I would say, successful South African gamers are.
So their bread and butter sort of comes from a variety of sources.
Yeah.
But they still give like a large percentage of like their like working hours towards gaming in some way or another. Yeah.
Well, I'd say that the key for me would be, are you winning? Are you getting your money from prize winnings and a team salary? Or are you getting your money from like Google AdWords and from brand product placements? Because like then you're probably closer in the influencer space than in the athlete space. You know, the pro gamers are getting their money from winning tournaments. Like, for example, PewDiePie is not a pro gamer. He is a content creator and influencer. That's where he makes his money. Whereas, you know, someone who plays on a professional team and is getting their money from winning million-dollar tournaments, yeah, there might be some influencer and streaming income as well, but you'd say that that person's an esports athlete first and foremost. So while we might have like hopefully opened up the idea that like there are various different ways to make a living in the gaming industry, I guess the question, and you know, this might be a broad kind of just career question that one needs to answer is, so how do you choose? You know, you've decided that I really want to get into gaming, but what are my options? Either I already have a career that I've started in, you know, whatever direction I've been going in, or I'm at high school and I'm, you know, getting to the stage where I'm choosing subjects or moving to varsity, choosing, you know, which degree to do. What should I do if I want to get into gaming? Because, you know, we said before, if you search, you know, game careers or game degrees, whatever, in South Africa, there are very few. I think you did a search, there are three answers that came up, Tim.
Yeah, there's game design at Wits University. There's the Academic Institute of Excellence. They've got a game design course as well. And then Vega does game design and development. And I think all of these courses will sort of touch on various parts of the industry that we sort of covered. And it's interesting because you could probably draw similarities with like the core like film school courses that are offered, you know, at like AFTA film production, or you know, you'll usually end up with various streams of study within that, like you know, computer systems development, or you know, software development, front end, whatever, or in like using the film comparison, like producing or acting or filming. And then they'll do like collaborations within the class where you'll have group projects and someone in the group will be the developer, someone will be like the project lead, someone will be the writer or designer, you know what I mean? So like that way, I think an advantage that some of these courses have is that when you, by the time you leave these courses, you usually end up with quite a bit of work in your portfolio already. The portfolio is sort of like the touch point for a lot of jumping off into these various career paths.
Yeah. No, the great segue there, because I think what we're talking about for a lot of the jobs in the space is that you don't have a formal qualification as a license to operate. So if you think of careers like being a lawyer, you cannot be a lawyer unless you have an LLB. And then past that, did you pass the bar exam and all that? Like, you can't practice as a lawyer. You can provide legal advice, you know, to a big corporate. You can work in the legal division, but you cannot be a lawyer, advocate or attorney, whatever, without at least finishing a law degree. You then, for example, a doctor, like, you can't technically be a practicing doctor without your, you know, medical degree. And so there are some degrees that have almost licenses to operate. That doesn't exist right in the gaming space. You know, if you go and create games as a hobby and then, you know, you meet the right people and you show them and they give you a chance and then you get bigger and bigger projects, you know, it's not, you might not have studied ever. You might not have even finished high school. So it's difficult to recommend study directions for anyone in the gaming space, because the truth is a portfolio will probably get you further than any degree. So showing you can make a game, showing that you can do game art, showing your, I don't know what audio engineers would show as their, you know, portfolio, but I imagine music or sound effects that they've created, mixed, done whatever, Foley work, whatever, levels that you've designed, those sort of things will go much further than saying, I have a receipt from university saying that I spent 3 years here. You know, it's like,
I have a license to design games.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, exactly. Like, showing your, you know, like, exactly, showing your driver's license doesn't show that you're a good or bad driver. It just shows that you're allowed to drive. You know, you can have a driver's license and never drive, you know, as long as you pass that exam. And so I wanted to touch on a principle that I found when researching some of this career stuff. And it's a Japanese principle called ikigai. And the Japanese, loosely translated, it's a reason for being. And I don't want to get too existential or whatever in terms of career choices and your purpose for being and all that. But I think it really does help if you are wanting to be realistic about your chances and opportunities in any given career. It breaks it down into kind of four principles. The one being, what are you passionate about? So what do you like doing? And so I suppose easy answer here, I like playing games. Okay, brilliant. So we've answered the first question to you. We like playing games. But secondly, the next one is, what are you good at?
Because I'm not good at playing games.
Yeah. But it might be, I'm good at drawing, and then easy answer. It might be that I'm good at selling, or I'm good at looking after people, or whatever it is that you're good at. Then the next question is, what does the world need? And so obviously, where's there this is as simple as a skill shortage. If you think of entrepreneurs going, oh, where's the gap in the market? Recruitment going, oh, where are we under-sourced or under kind of staffed in certain areas? What skills are we looking for? And finally, it all kind of leads to, and what will people give you money for? Because I think the problem half the time is people take highly skilled, unenjoyable positions. So say you're an accountant. I know I always rag on accountants, but it's the kind of thing where a lot of people I know studied accounting because, yeah, they're good at it and they know they'll make money and they know that the world needs it, you know, until the machine learning kicks in. But anyway, the world needs accountants, and they'll pay for accountants. And if you're good at it, you will make money. Brilliant. So you've ticked three of the four boxes. And the problem is people go, yeah, but I don't enjoy it. So what do they end up doing? They end up leaving to become musicians. You know, let's take the music.
I was just about to say, like, so my guitar teacher notoriously had an engineering degree.
Well, there you go. So left to become a guitar teacher, but had ambitions of being a professional musician. So that's where that started. Right. So I'm going to be a professional musician with my background as an accountant. Now, the problem is that that person is going, they're taking a high skill, low enjoyment, high pay, high desire position, and taking something that from the world's point of view is low desire, because there's so much music out there. There's not like this rampant desire for their music into a space. And therefore, because there's low desire, there's also low pay. And also because they haven't been doing it for very long, probably low skill, but high enjoyment. So you're going for a 3 out of 4 into a 1 out of 4. And I think that's sometimes the problem is, if I think of the gaming space, you know, Tim, you were talking about how, you know, playing Dota, you were going to get so good and eventually become a professional Dota player. But, you know, that mountain is so, so high. The amount of people who can be professional Dota players is so limited. Handful. But if you go, your skill set is actually in, you know, producing content or, you know, producing a content strategy for someone, then, and then your love for gaming can overlap with that, then you can go, I'm doing what I love doing, which is I'm in games. I'm doing what I'm good at, which is producing content or helping others kind of like strategize and produce their content. I'm getting paid for it because that's what people want, is they want good content about games. And there's a desire for it. So you're going from a whatever, your 3 out of 4 situation to a 4 out of 4 situation. And so, you know, while you might not be making the money you would have earned as an accountant, you potentially are moving to a space where at least you are feeling more fulfilled because you're being paid, you've got purpose, you are doing something you enjoyed, and you're doing something that you're good at. And I think that's really the key, is going, cool, you want to be in games, but asking that next question of going, yeah, but what are you good at? And, you know, what could you stand doing 24 hours a day?
So, like, I just want to chat anecdotally quickly about my experience So there was a time when I wanted to be in game development as well, but this is when I was very young. This is like back in the 90s, you know, I was like maybe like a lighty, like 10, 11, 12 or so, like joining like StarCraft and Diablo 1 and 2. And I was like really inspired by, I used to draw a lot, and I was really inspired by Blizzard's concept art because it's just always, you know, all the games came with this huge concept art book, and I loved looking through those, copying all the characters and just drawing them. I'd like sit and draw these characters for hours, and then I had a scanner at home, so I'd like scan them into the computer, then clean up the lines and try to do digital color work and then create small animations at different frames. So I was already training and practicing myself for animation before I'd even knew that I wanted to be in that stream, like before I was even in high school, you know. And I did end up doing fine art in high school, but I didn't end up kind of following a career path into animation. But I had other friends who did something similar because we used to play online together at the time. We all grew up in the 90s and, you know, played the same games and had the same interest in computers. You know, I think it was back then computer studies like just started being a subject at school. And some of those friends went into software development and did, you know, computer studies and software engineering at university. And it all came from that same place of inspiration from playing games and like being inspired by computers and systems and electronics and the art that kind of goes hand in hand with that and those experiences playing those games, you know. But to sort of temper expectations again, software development, like having a degree in software development or like any type of computer language or systems engineering doesn't mean you're going to be creating like fun things. No. You know, like I've got a lot of friends who work in software development now, and you really have to be, you have to be super zen. You really have to love code. You have to love code, be like super OCD, be really at peace with like just looking at lines and lines of code and feeling like, you know, proud and fulfilled that is like what you're doing. Because for me, if I had to go into animation, it wouldn't have just been, you know, lying on my tummy on the floor, drawing these cool pictures of monsters and stuff all day. Like it would probably be sitting and working with polygons and hexagons for hours and hours, like molding shapes, scanning things, moving lines, like on and like working on a whack, and all that stuff can be very tedious. So when you're looking at like a career path in gaming, sort of in the inspiration phase, and then comparing it to like how a lot of these career paths, like where they land, where they end up typically, it's a good idea to then have that conversation and figure out whether that is something that actually does bring you joy and is worth pushing on.
Yeah. I think the key is you kind of touched on it there. They talk about enjoy the grind, because think of some of the games you play. So there's some games where the grind is tedious and you feel like, why am I doing this? And if you ever have that epiphany moment where you go like, what the hell am I doing? You often just like stop playing the game entirely. You like uninstall it, put away, never play it again. But if you enjoy the grind, if you enjoy that day in, day out, I mean, let's take the gym or running or keeping fit example, like the amount of people who like hit the gym hard every day, first thing in the morning, not because they're trying to get the chiseled body or like win some race, whatever. They just enjoy that grind. They are far more likely to keep going when things get shit. And so yeah. If you like your coding example, if you like sitting with an hours of code and solving a problem and finding a bug, fixing that sort of stuff, then, you know, the rewards are being involved in the gaming industry and getting to make games that people love and all that. But the like you said, the shit stuff, you will actually won't be shit to you. You know what I mean? So I think that's the key. The amount of people who like playing games and therefore, oh, if I could be a game journalist, that'd be the great best because I get free games and write about them. You've got to like writing first. If you're the kind of person like, oh, free games, oh God, I've got to pull a review out of somewhere and I hate this game. And if you don't like writing, don't become a game journalist. Because, you know, the answer's in the title. You're a journalist. Gaming is just the topic. So, for example, you should feel as fulfilled, maybe not as fulfilled, but a certain level of fulfillment just from being a motorsports writer. Journalist or a beauty journalist, or because it's actually the journalism that you enjoy. The gaming is just the fact that you can dovetail your passion or your hobbies with what you're writing about. But there are plenty of people who are journalists or writers in areas that are not their personal area of expertise. They're just there because they've got to put bread on the table. You know, they just happen to fall into whatever the motor industry or beauty industry because they got a job, but they're actually passionate about completely other things. And they're just kind of biding their time, I guess.
But there's also like a lot of building on that. There's a lot of like merit to be had from having just the job, even if it's not in the industry that you wanted, right? So a couple of these friends that I have who work in software development, they might have, you know, like a weekly like coding meetup where they actually like are working on a game, like an indie game that they might have to present at some stage, or it'll be like an office challenge where, you know, you'll create a team and then, you know, like the best team can win X or something. You know what I mean? Like you can make your games on the side as a hobby, and that's a good way to actually gauge whether that career path is something for you.
Yeah.
And if you want to take that on into riskier territory, you know, which would be like quit my day job and let's make this thing happen.
Or even committing to studying it, you know, like.
Right, exactly.
If you say that you know, a lot of people only have a certain window, and I don't want to get pessimistic. I mean, I could quit my day job and study something completely different right now. I just have to manage the fact that I've got to keep the, you know, bills paid and feed my child and look after my household. So it becomes more difficult. But, you know, some people, if you've got that window, you know, out of high school into studying something, your parents have given you either the space, you know, it might even be financial. You might have to still take out student loans, but they've given you the space in terms of your lifestyle where, for example, you're living at home and not having to pay rent, or, you know, rent is nominal, or there's some sort of setup that allows you because you're young to be able to study full time. Making the decision to dedicate those 3 or 4 years to gaming as opposed to accounting, psychology, you know, something a little bit more traditional and mainstream is, you know, I won't say it's a gamble because it's obviously a calculated risk, but hopefully you've done your research in that point of view. I just want to, before we close, just touch on some of the questions that we were given. You know, we asked around, you know, in terms of careers in gaming and some of the questions that came back. So where does one look for vacancies in the kind of gaming space?
Yeah, so I mean, vacancies, a lot of developers will post their vacancies the way that if you are a developer and you are looking for a job on like a new game at a new software development agency, they do post on forums. You'll just have to kind of do your own Googling on that. You can look at discussion boards as well. Blogs in South Africa, we've got Indeed, we've got Careers 24, we've got Biz Community. And software development positions are in high demand at the moment.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great software
development.
Exactly. A lot of great software development positions that are open, that are available, and a lot of companies are hungry for it because they've started pushing their content online. So you might you know, find yourself a great entry level position in software development, not necessarily in gaming, but I think the strongest thing, the strength of that being that you will meet people in the industry in software development and be able to network. And like networking is really how you move yourself through the industry. You know, you might end up leaving the company in 2 or 3 years with like a handful of your colleagues, you know, because you're going somewhere else, or you've made your own game that's gotten picked up by a bigger developer and you're getting merged into a bigger team. Like these things all happen. I think it's good to get in from the ground up, learn your way around the industry, around teams, and make connections. Yeah.
I think we're still at a stage in the industry very similar to, I suppose, music and film production, where there are these giants that you can try join, and your outlook might be, I've made it when I can be a senior developer at Blizzard. You know, that's you having made it. That's your dream. And I have a friend who at school studied computer science and then did design and then got into EA. And that was always his dream, to become a developer at a big studio. But for some people, it's just about, I want to be the owner of my own independent studio. And we're still at the space because of the tools that are available, the access to, you know, facilities like Steam's Greenlight and a lot of these other kind of indie development portfolios, where yes, the competition is difficult in the same way as, you know, making a film is difficult, because you might say, oh, but YouTube allows all sorts of access. It allows access to everyone, right, in the same way as Instagram did to photographers, in the same way as, you know, SoundCloud did to music producers. The ability to get in and have access to the software that, you know, beforehand you would have had to study to be able to use or even have access to, would only be at studios. You can do all that stuff at home now. The problem is obviously the ability to stand out becomes more difficult. Yeah. And so I think that's where I potentially think partnerships between different pieces of the machinery need to come together. I think the weakness, if I look at some of like the local South African produced games, is that they have potentially a strong product. So you produce a good product, but it's the other pieces that make the big game stand out. And I'm not trying to say you need $100 million marketing budget like a game like GTA might have, but they have marketing teams. They have, right, you know, all sorts of retail
global marketing
deals.
Teams,
they,
yeah.
Exactly. They've got all the stuff that you don't have. And so even if your game is of the caliber of a, you know, triple A sized, you know, game in terms of the quality of the game, getting it out there is sometimes a difficulty. And, you know, we see games, you know, of high quality that managed to shoot through in obscurity, like Hades last year, like highly polished game, really, really good. But yeah, didn't have the marketing budget of some of the behemoths, and managed to get through based on, I guess, word of mouth and quality alone. But there are so many high quality games that don't even get noticed. I think the last stat I heard is something like 150 games a day are released on Steam. That might not be accurate, but like that's the kind of level you're talking about. Then you add on top of that mobile and other storefronts and all that, there are just so many games being produced. How do you get yours noticed? In the same way as like if I was a music producer, it's like, cool, my music's on Spotify. Cool.
Just yeah, like look, and I mean, I take my hat off to people like your friend you just mentioned, who has this type of surety about what they want and trajectory of like, I'm on this path and I'm sticking on this path. I mean, from my experience, I always was nervous about making my passion my obligation, something that you'll get tested on and can fail on and can, you know, have to rely on for your livelihood.
Because so it's hard not to take
it personal.
I was
in a position where,
when you fail.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like when, you know, I was at a crossroads when I first wanted to go to university, because like, what did I study? Like, I love art, I love music. And I visited the art school, I visited the music school, because I was interested in doing both. But ultimately, I didn't want someone to tell me that my music is wrong, I'm doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And I didn't end up studying that. I ended up doing something completely different. I did like media and writing and marketing, and that has aided me in the career path that I ended up choosing. I still did my music,
but
you know,
you,
as a hobby for myself.
Yeah.
I still do art, but it was a conscious decision to be like, I will not study that, because it might make me just hate art, like hate music and give it up altogether. Who knows? Yeah. So,
well, I remember an example of when I was still doing stand-up comedy where the friends, I was kind of at the part of my career as well, where it's like, decide to quit your day job and do this full time, because then your growth is exponential. It's because you can dedicate, you know, 24 hours a day if you want to your craft. You're not having to do it between lectures or between, you know, work days. And the friends I had seen done it, you know, who'd kind of quit their day job and going comedy full time, were all succeeding, you know, financially, at least from a comedy point of view. I don't know how it compares to their day jobs, because, you know, it's not something you share, like how much you're earning in your day job with your comedy colleagues. But what interested me was how much their art form had to change to be financially viable. It became a thing of going, something as simple as, you get offered a gig, maybe the five comedians or so offered a gig, and the pay was garbage and the venue was garbage and you knew the clientele was garbage. It was not going to be a fun gig. And so you turned it down because you're like, I have a day job. I don't have to do this. But a lot of my friends who are pro comics would go like, yeah, okay, cool, I'll do it. Knowing that they'll hate it, knowing that they're going to have to butcher their material to like fit the audience, knowing that the pay wasn't particularly good, but, you know, they need to eat. It's not like they can go, I'll just do my day job. And so it's that sort of thing. And I remember having to chat to a good friend of mine, Deep Fried Man, who was, you know, became a professional comic several years ago. He's been doing that for a while now. He was saying it sucks how you have to make content for certain audiences. You like he said, you literally had to look at his pieces and go like, you know what? I don't actually have any content for a majority like elderly audience. And so we'd have to sit and write content for them on the off chance that he's ever at a gig where he has to do material for old people.
Interesting.
And same for like different demographics.
Man, I got Indian no material audience. For prison audiences. Shit.
Yes, 100%. And so you're like, cool. I mean, prison is a pretty niche, but like, you know, in this country, the difference between a majority black audience or young audience or Indian audience or what, very, very different material is going to fly and is going to fail.
Totally.
And that's okay to experiment with when you are a non-career comedian, because you're like, I'm just going to do me. And if they don't like me, well, screw them. I'm not going to capitulate to my audience. And I remember being that arrogant person where like, I'm not going to apologize for my audience's level of intelligence. So I'm going to do jokes that I think are intelligent and all that. And when they bomb, it's their fault, not my fault. But when it's the difference between me getting booked again because I need to get paid so that I can eat or pay rent, then you don't make those selfish decisions. You make those decisions based on like, you know, what's going to appease the audience and get me, you know, booked again. Because I don't want the person who booked me on the gig to look like an idiot because they booked some guy who can't entertain the audience. So yeah, those decisions are tough, you know, keeping it as a hobby versus a passion. I think just in general, we have this idea that like having a side gig is a temporary situation because you want it to be your eventual end game. You know, your side gig might be writing because the idea is that one day I want to be a professional author. And that's the expectation we put on ourselves and society puts on us, is going, oh, that's a cool side gig. And that's, you know, it's very admirable that you've got that on the side. But, you know, the mark of success would be turning that side hustle into a full-time thing. And what if all you wanted was just, you know, I have this passion for writing. My day job doesn't allow me to express it. And so I do it as a hobby just so that I feel like fulfilled. So I can still put food on the table and, you know, have this career that it gives me challenges and progression. I get to meet people and be social, but I don't get to create. And so that's what writing does for me.
And, you know, I think that's where some things like discussion boards like Reddit can come in, because there's a big indie scene with sort of like young developers who are collabing on various projects, and they post there, and you might find yourself a project that you could jump on, you know, where there's like four developers on a team, but they don't have a writer. They don't know anything about writing. And you could come in as that person being like, I've already written scripts for these games I'm never going to make.
You know, 100%.
Can I share some of these ideas with you and start collaborating? Because that's how you build a portfolio. That's how you make long lasting connections and friendships within the industry. And, you know, find a network that can take you to the places that you want to push your talents.
I mean, that's a great example. You want to be a game writer, and it's hard sometimes to write a game in isolation. Like, I just wrote the script for no reason. But if someone's giving you this, like, hey, you know, we're this game studio and we need a writer to do dialogue for these characters, well, maybe you get a paid for gig, you know, a couple of dollars to write. But otherwise, you know, you might just get yourself that portfolio that you need, because then you can present to potential big studios, look at this game I made, instead of look at the script I wrote. It's a bigger deal to be able to present a finished product. But yeah, it's an exciting time, I think, for those who are wanting to get in the gaming industry. I just look over the past 4 years since I quit my job and started like going to the space full time, just all the opportunities that are available that just didn't exist beforehand in South Africa.
Yeah.
And I mean, the world's your oyster in terms of, you know, if you go internationally with this sort of stuff. I think South Africa is very backward, and with that is obviously less opportunity. But I would say less opportunity in a developed space. So I think people are still looking for the day when you can go on a job board and apply for the gaming job and get the gaming job because you did the right degree and studied the right things and you can just get it. Those jobs don't exist here. Those degrees don't exist here. And so I think it is difficult for those who are looking for a more round peg, round hole sort of situation. But if you have the mindset to be able to spot the gap, you know what people want, create what people want, partner with the right people, then I definitely think opportunities in gaming in South Africa are only growing, and especially South Africa into Africa.
To add to that, I think the space, you know, post-COVID is also becoming a lot more democratized in that like developers are not so picky about hiring people from other countries now, since a lot of people are working remotely. I've got a few friends who are working for developers in Europe, one in Sweden, and he works from home here in South Africa. You know, he has a machine like on this side that like logs into the machine that they have set up on that side, and it's all remote work, you know? So a lot of like, and I only see that space growing in the next, you know, 100%. 5 to 10 years. If you're a listener who's, you know, now looking at what you can jump into studies wise, you know, or if you're someone who's been in the industry of development and are looking to try and like shift that into the gaming industry space, try that approach as well. Like there's no harm in actually applying for these positions because a lot of the time they, you know, it comes down to the talent, and they'll make changes and concessions if they find the right talent.
100%. Well, I hope that I know that we've gone and left you with probably more questions than answers. And if you have those questions, please do drop us a line on Twitter at @guru_podcast, otherwise at the Gareth Woods or at Tim and the Fish. We're more than happy to answer those questions either online or in our next pod. But hopefully we've also given you a couple of answers. And if you are interested in a career in gaming, obviously give it a bit of thought. Consider if a career is what you want, or if you just, it can remain a passion as it is for millions of people across the world. But until next time, we were going to love and leave you, and we'll see you in another 2 weeks with our next episode of the Gaming Guru podcast. But until then, go out and play some games.